we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March the 17th, 2017. This is Animal Voices. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
And our guest co-host, Denise Swanson.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for coming today, both of you. Today's show is dedicated to Meat Out Day, which happens annually on March the 20th. To start off with our Meat Out show, we'll be presenting a segment about everyday ways to eat vegan, and then we'll have a feature interview with Paul Shapiro about all things to do with cutting out the meat. Paul is the Vice President of Policy Engagement for the Humane Society of the United States, and I know he's always at the forefront of the latest info with regards to animal agriculture industry and trends in dropping the meat from our diets. He'll be on the show today answering all burning questions when it comes to the latest news in animal agriculture and the food industry. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned. And yeah, I wanted to go straight into actually some updates you have for us, Jen, about what's happening with the Vancouver Aquarium these days.
As most Vancouverites know, last week was an epic week and a win for animal rights activists who've been battling the aquarium's captivity of cetaceans for up to 25 years. And it was that the park board decided to have a ban on cetacean importation and captivity on park land. And sadly, it is just on park land that that would apply. So if the aquarium was to go elsewhere, obviously this would be something that would be up for debate again. But following that incident, a Facebook group called Friends of the Vancouver Aquarium has silenced criticism by animal rights activists by immediately deleting comments from the activists on their Facebook page. And you can go ahead and check it out. There won't be many there, as a lot have been deleted immediately after they were written. I've been following reports by activists in the past week on this issue, and I've seen screenshots of their comments that were taken just before they were deleted by the admins on the page. And I have to say that the activists' comments were factual and stated in a reasonable tone, so there was really no logical reason to have deleted them other than obviously to hide the truth that they were stating, which, as we all know, the aquarium and some of their supporters have a history of hiding these truths. And I always want to mention that you can find out more about what I'm talking about by watching the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, and that's free on YouTube. And speaking of that documentary, which was made by a local filmmaker, we will be back in court again next week with the aquarium and the filmmaker, just following up on the lawsuit from last spring, where the aquarium was basically trying to silence the truth by getting the film taken off the internet by making a claim that there was copyright infringement in portions of the film, and the judge actually ordered about 5 minutes worth of the film taken out. So this court appearance next week will just be the appeal for that. And if you also are interested in a little bit more about the park board meeting last week, if you missed it, as the media didn't cover a lot of it, the entire thing was filmed, and you can find that on the city website. Also, I've posted some clips on the Vancouver Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook page that you can find. And I encourage you to watch the video footage of the park board meetings on this topic, because you'll see some really interesting conversations between the aquarium's CEO, John Nightingale, and their head veterinarian, Martin Haluma, when they could not answer certain questions that you would think somebody running an aquarium and who states that one of their main mandates is to study the health of belugas would be able to answer. And one of those questions was asked by Park Board Commissioner Stuart McKinnon. And he asked John and Martin how far and wide belugas swim in the wild and how deep they can swim.
That seems like a pretty basic question.
And yeah, and they were stumbling their words and unable to answer. And so Stuart finally just answered for them and said, well, they can dive 700 meters. And then he quickly followed up with, how big are your pools going to be in your newly expanded tanks? And again, more fumbling of words by John Nightingale, which I found both funny and sad. And then he said that they would be between 7 and 10 meters.
Did you post that one on our Facebook? Because I saw that going around.
It is all up there, as well as another video from last week where John violently tried to rip a cell phone out of an activist's hand who was simply making video of the meeting in a room that was also full of other TV cameras and lots of people making video.
So the saga continues on, even though there was a win for the animals, you know, things are still, it feels like all the loose ends aren't tied up yet. And we're fortunate to have Jan Yu in at the show every week, pretty much, to give us updates on what's happening. So thanks for that. And who knows what might be happening next week, right?
Well, I just think it's important that we have a show such as ours because the mainstream media tends not to cover our side of things, us animal rights activists. And it's really easy for the aquarium to slander us, and they have been doing so. And I think if the public knew a little bit more about what we know, they would be more understanding that we really are fighting for the animals and we are seen through some of these lies. And we want the truth out there. So the best way for you to find out more would be to watch Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered.
For sure. Well, thank you for that little update there. And as I mentioned before, Meet Out Day is coming up. That's on March the 20th. It happens annually every year. This is a day that the Farm Animal Rights Movement, wonderful group in the U.S., they've been putting this yearly event on. It's worldwide pretty much every year since 1985, and activists around the world have celebrated March 20th. It's a day to, well, it's going to be the first day of spring, and it's a day to celebrate veganism and to encourage people to adopt a plant-based vegan diet for the animals, for your health, and for the earth. And you know what? I think that the origin of Meat Out Day was go vegan for a day, but I think that we're getting beyond that, where we can ask people to maybe they are going meatless for a day already. It's like, go beyond that and go vegan a little bit more. What do you two think?
Yeah, do it for as long as you can.
That's how I originally went meatless myself. I started cutting out meat. I remember thinking, like, I'm going to start only eating meat once a week. And it was only a type of meat that I could kind of like tolerate, that what didn't look too meaty or fleshy to me. And then I found that, like, I can do this. This is pretty easy. I'm just going to eat meat once a month. And then when it came up to January the 1st, that was basically my New Year's resolution. And that was in 1994, and I haven't looked back. So I think that the path can be different for anyone, for sure, in dropping the meat from your diet. And I think that everyone's different. And if you feel that you can go vegan overnight, you should do that. If you don't, then how about you stay tuned and you can listen to suggestions that we will have later on the show on how we eat and how you can adopt a vegan diet.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food. Sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food. Hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
Now we have some events. The National Animal Rights Conference takes place from August 3rd to 6th at the Hilton Mark Center in Washington, D.C., and tickets are on sale now. Allison and Jen are going, and so is Jen's mom.
And so should everyone else, then.
So excited.
You can buy tickets online through Eventbrite for $150 for the 4 days of speaking events and animal rights organization tabling events.
Rooms. They have a discounted price right now. Is that $150 the discount?
It's $130 Canadian, and for the type of hotel we're in, that is a steal.
So the but they have a discount until today. So
I think
your
tickets
today.
Was it $125?
Yeah, it's $125. Okay. So it goes till today. Yeah.
Okay.
Extended it.
Sign up quick.
So rooms at the Hilton can be purchased for $130 Canadian a night, but are limited. So we suggest making a reservation ASAP. Be sure to mention that you are with the conference. Information can be found at arconference.org. Come to Squamish for a screening of Lush Cosmetics' new documentary, Trophy, followed by a short discussion with the Wildlife Defense League at Brackendale Art Gallery. This event is by donation and takes place at 41950 Government Road on Wednesday, March 29th from 7 to 10 p.m. Each year, thousands of grizzlies are killed worldwide for entertainment. Diving deep into the controversy across Canada and the United States, Trophy asks, can we truly justify killing these animals for sport? Find more info on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Come to an event which teaches you to create a plant-based product and business, hosted by Vegan Vancouver, March 28th, that's a Saturday, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., location to be announced. What does it take to create, manufacture, distribute, and market a plant-based food product? Do you want your products to make a social impact too? Join the next event and be inspired by two presenters who have built successful food products and one who has also started a foundation for young entrepreneurs. Come and connect with a room full of awesome people and support businesses in the Vancouver area who are doing great things for the vegan and plant-based community. The first 10 people to register are entered into a draw to win some prizes. Info can be found at meetup.com, and the event is called Create a Plant-Based Product and Business. Tomorrow, from 9 to 2 p.m., come and be part of the 10th annual Fraser River Cleanup, hosted by Fraser Valley Illegal Dumping Alliance and Fraser Riverkeeper. Since 2007, the annual Fraser River Cleanup, organized with the help of Wood Tone, the late Andy Rotsetter of Rots Disposal, and partners in the Fraser Valley Illegal Dumping Alliance, has netted a whopping 88 tons of illegally dumped garbage from wilderness areas and salmon habitat. This year, they're making it their mission to mark the cleanup's 10th anniversary by bringing their 10-year total to more than 100 tons. With your help, we can do it. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thanks so much for that. And yeah, you're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio, Animal Voices, here on 100.5 FM CFRO. And on today's show, dedicated to Meat Out Day, which is on March the 20th, we three of us, Jen, Denise, and I, wanted to share with you, our listeners, about how we eat vegan every day. So hopefully we can incorporate some ideas, perhaps, into your daily lifestyle, into your diet, you know, just give you some tips and advice on how perhaps you can do the same as well. So everyone should be starting off the day with their breakfast. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, right? And I know how I like to start my day off for breakfast, but I'm curious to know, Denise, how do you start your day off with breakfast? I know you used to always get a muffin and a coffee, but times have since changed since then,
yes,
right?
Yes, sometimes I'll go out to J.J. Bean or Our Town Cafe and get one of their awesome vegan muffins, but usually when I'm home, I will have Silver Hill Squirrely Bread Toast with pumpkin seed butter. And this is totally loaded with protein, fiber, and iron. So that's how I start my day, and I usually top that up with whatever else is around.
And what were you saying? That is 50% of your daily required iron and
protein? Almost, pretty close.
All in one.
Just two little pieces of toast.
Wow. Yep. Mm-hmm. And people are so obsessed with how much protein we're getting, which we all laugh at, because we should be more concerned about fiber intake and vitamin D intake. Right, everybody?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Jen, speaking of fiber, you like to start off your day with fiber.
Yes. I have oatmeal topped with every seed I have in my house, such as pumpkin seeds, sunflower, chia, hemp. You gave me a giant bag of seeds.
Thank you. I remember that.
I'm still eating those.
Oh, it's wonderful.
And
that
then I pour
using
maple
them.
Syrup on top, and then I do cinnamon toasted pecans,
wow,
which you can make in the oven.
That sounds both decadent and healthy.
Yeah. I love
it. And is it like the instant oats that you use? Like,
no, I use the long cooking oats, okay, and oat groats if I can. I mean, I'm up. I always am up 2 hours before I have to be out the door. So there's time to cook.
I noticed
that
you're an early riser, so you're not rushing in the morning. So I'm the opposite. I get up early, but I go straight out to the gym. And when I get back, I am craving a smoothie, because that's how I start off my day. So I also have a little bit of a chocolate weakness. Don't we all?
Don't we all?
I guess we were eating chocolate, or at least I was right before the show, which I often bring to the station. But so I'm pretty obsessed with my banana and chocolate smoothies these days. I'm always like having a craving to satisfy like that sweet tooth craving in the morning, but also to start off fairly healthily at least. So I start my day off. So I always have frozen bananas in my freezer. I buy them really cheap from the market, 19 cents a pound when they're really brown, and I peel them and I put them straight into my freezer. So that's the first tip I can offer, is always have frozen bananas in your freezer, not just for smoothies, but for ice cream as well.
And banana bread with walnuts.
Yeah, so banana bread, exactly. So those are like the three things that I like to make. So you just pop into those frozen bananas, and then I use 2 tablespoons of cacao or cocoa powder, whatever you want to call it, or you can use cacao nibs as well. And then what else? And then I put in 4 ice cubes to make it colder, because the frozen bananas will be cold, but not quite as cold as I want it. And then you can either use some plant-based milk or water, or sometimes I use a combination of the two. It just depends how I'm feeling. And I fill that with like 1.5 to 2 cups of water or soy milk or almond milk. And then I put in a little bit of sweetener too, because those bananas aren't sweet enough for me usually. A little bit of stevia. So there's 0 calories in that. And then I blend it all up in my Vitamix, and you start your day off with a delicious smoothie. Now, today I actually I wasn't craving that chocolate smoothie this morning. That's why I had to eat the chocolate right before the show. So today I actually started off with just a basic green smoothie. You know, it's St. Patrick's Day today, by the way. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patty's Day.
How did you celebrate? Did you celebrate with a green smoothie this morning like I did?
I was listening to Jody's show
Sun Resistance.
Yeah. On the way to the station, and she was playing some Irish punk music.
It's a good way to celebrate.
Thanks, Jody.
And Denise is wearing a beautiful green scarf because it's the only green she has.
Yeah.
Other than, I would say that your shirt does qualify as being green.
Blue, green, and yellow.
If you're just oh so curious about what we're talking about, we're going to be taking a group photo for St. Patrick's Day and Meet Out Day after the show, so you can check our Facebook page later today to see what all the fuss is about. I'm wearing green, so yay for St. Patrick's Day and yay for Meet Out. So green smoothie this morning. I always like, so you can put in fruit I put in frozen fruit. I put in an apple. I put in some frozen strawberries. Today I use frozen pomegranate seeds, frozen blueberries. It was really quite a medley of all those like really high antioxidant berries that exist. And then I just like to pack the rest of the blender with spinach. Or if I have kale, I put kale or whatever you have. I just don't recommend using arugula or mustard greens. I learned the hard way. Have you ever tried that?
They're bitter. Yeah.
Yeah. Not what I want for my morning smoothie. I'm always like wanting something sort of like on the sweeter side.
Well, speaking of spinach, I learned that it's really good to put iron with vitamin C. So sometimes I'll have a giant spinach salad in the morning, and then I'll have an orange with it.
Yeah, that makes the iron more absorbable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what about for people who like eggs in the morning? What would you suggest? Eat eggs?
Well, actually, eggs are not allowed to be called a health food, according to Dr. Michael Greger. Mm-hmm. By the way, check him out on YouTube. They're very high in cholesterol. And I always say to people, if you want to go vegan, don't think that you have to replace all of the things you eat with something identical. You don't have to find a vegan egg, which does exist. I mean, like I just said, I have a spinach salad for breakfast sometimes, or oatmeal, or sometimes I'll have last night's stir fry.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Denise?
Or leftover quiche. Yesterday I made mini quiches.
How did you make your quiche?
Which obviously don't have any eggs because they're vegan, and you just use chickpea flour.
Chickpea flour, yeah. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Well, I want your recipe.
Very quick and easy.
Is there tofu in it and chickpea flour?
There's no tofu in it.
No tofu? So I like a good tofu scramble myself. So for all the tofu naysayers out there, like try it. Try it before you diss it.
Mm-hmm.
I love tofu scramble. I had a massive craving for a tofu. Well, first of all, I barely ever cook, but I had a big craving for tofu scramble one morning for breakfast about a month ago. And yeah, I I made some, and that's why I always have extra firm tofu in your fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Crumble it up, fry some onions, fry some garlic, put that in, and then I use whatever I sort of have in my fridge. I had a zucchini to use, so I just chopped up the zucchini, and what else did I put in there? You can put in, for even more protein if you want, put in some beans or whatever.
It's good to have those kitchen sink recipes, right, where you can just put in
everything.
They're just totally versatile. Like I do that with wraps. It's just whatever happens to be sitting around in my fridge goes in my wraps, and I just toast it in a dry skillet, and it's delicious.
The wonders of wraps. So that's sort of like moving on to lunch. And Denise, lunch is one of your biggest meals of the day, right? So how do you sort of approach lunch since you're a lunch person?
Right. Well, you know, if I'm out at work, it took me a while, but I got into the habit of bringing my own lunch with me to work, and it just made life so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
I just put things in, you know, either microwavable glass or Tupperware containers. Things like stews and soups that I've made. I make things in large batches. That way I don't have to be cooking all the time. I make enough for several days, and if I don't finish it right away, I put some in the freezer and I can use that later.
If you live on your own, it's always enough for more than several days, right? So that's what I find as well, is that, free stuff for sure. You're talking about stews. I'm a big soup person myself, but I don't, like I was saying, I don't cook. So I buy soups from David Isbister from Plant Based Foods. Shout out to him. If you are in the Vancouver area, highly recommend. I tell him he has the best soups in the city. And I don't think that's a joke of commercially made soups that you, I mean, better than I can make. So,
You can also make them without doing too much, simply by throwing things in a slow cooker before you go to work, and it's ready when you get home.
If you had that 10 minutes before work.
Which
I never
But,
you know, everyone's life is different. So, So we're talking about ideas for lunch. And what about protein? Because I know, Denise, you're actually, I call you a human nutrition calculator. You know what's in everything.
Well, I was telling you about my breakfast. Now, usually people don't think of bread as a protein, but the bread that I get has 5 grams of protein a slice. So, you know, even without putting anything on it, you have 2 slices of that, and that's a big chunk of your protein for the day. And then you put your protein-rich topping on it, whether that's a nut or seed butter or some, you know, hummus or whatever. And it's even more, right? But things with grains and beans have plenty of protein, nuts and seeds. I mean, most foods have quite a bit of protein other than fruit.
I just feel like you don't have to worry if you're eating a plant-based diet. You're going to get your protein. You wanted to talk about beans, Jen.
And I just want to say the only reason that we're talking about protein is for the people that think that you can't get protein from a plant-based diet. This is obvious to us, but the advertising out there by the meat and the egg and milk industries are obsessed with protein so that people continue to buy their products thinking that's the only place you get it. I eat a lot of beans, and they're really versatile. You can have them in soups, burritos, bean dips, quesadillas. I always have dried beans around the house, and I soak them overnight, and then I'll cook them up for a couple of hours in the morning while I do whatever I need to do. And then I've got a whole pot that I can use with lots of versatility throughout the week.
And it's dirt cheap, too.
And I'm very high in fiber. The protein that you get from animal sources is not going to be high in fiber at all.
It's great for regularity.
Right. I wasn't talking about that. I was just saying.
Vegans don't have that problem.
Okay, so moving on, dinner. So I was talking about my soups. I often have soup for dinner, but, and also I wanted to talk about sort of like really easy ideas, like eating out. Let's talk about eating out. So where would you go to grab a quick bite? I want to recommend, like you can grab, we're talking about wraps and bowls and that. There's quite a few places like that you can get stuff like that that's very vegan friendly in town, at least in Vancouver these days. There's the closest food establishment to my place is the Pita Pit, and they actually have like a black bean burger pita that you can order now. It's vegan. It says vegan on it. They chop up the burger and they fry it. I always ask them to wash the grill, but they're actually really good about doing that these days anyways. It seems like they've received new training since the old days when I used to not want to go there because it was kind of icky, but because they grill a lot of meat there too, but they do clean it off. And they and the black bean burger chopped up, they put it in your pita, you put in whatever vegetables you want, you can have them grilled as well. It's so delicious and satisfying. And then sometimes too, after the gym, actually what I've been doing is, if I don't feel like a smoothie, is I'll have one of their like little mini pitas just to like satisfy my appetite for lunch. And the last one I had was just like hummus, good in protein with veggies and that, and it was just so perfect. And then I also want to recommend Red Burrito, which is just down the street from me too. They do like really good rice and bean grilled vegetable burritos. It's all vegan, just hold the sour cream, you can have the avocado if you like it, but I don't like it, so I just hold that, and it's so satisfying. What about you two? What would you two recommend for sort of like easy things to eat out?
Almost every restaurant has vegan options nowadays. Like, it really has come a long way.
You think like everywhere? Because this you know, this radio show gets podcasted worldwide. I don't know about that myself. Like, I don't know. What do you think? You know, I like to go to vegetarian restaurants, so it's not a problem.
Yeah, I think that you're going to get fries and salad at a lot of places still.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. But you can try to veganize dishes that they already have. Right.
Yeah. And a lot of chefs really like doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you can be creative about that. I was just listening to a podcast yesterday that's in, I don't know, based in Colorado or somewhere. And apparently this place that this vegan went to, used to go to, is really heavy in their sort of standard American diet fare. That's what they always serve. But the guy has gotten friendly with the chef, and he asks, and every time he goes there, he makes them apparently this wonderful plant-based dish. Restaurants will do that. You just have to ask. Like, don't be afraid to ask.
And it's good to ask because you're advocating for the animals when you do it. If you just order the fries and say nothing, they don't learn that there are people that wanted something else.
And that's why I'll even speak up if I can see something that's like, oh, you don't have vegan, I don't know, butter, or you don't have vegan mayo, you know, it's really easy to buy these days, or whatever. Or what about Daya, like vegan cheese in your pizzas? You know, you can get, I have offered, like, I can bring you a sample, because if you if businesses connect with Daya Cheese, which is a big vegan cheese production company that actually wants to get out in resident to restaurants, they will send them free samples so they can try it out and test it.
And I think Earth Island will too, and it's a much better brand. It almost tastes identical to cheese, and it's the same price, by the way. You can find it at Whole Foods and Choices.
Yeah, let's talk about cheese a little bit.
There's pizza places, by the way, on the drive that you can get vegan
commercial
pizza. One is Famoso. Sorry,
and
East Van Pizza.
I've looked at the East Van Pizza website, and they actually have really interesting pizzas on there.
And I almost veganized their delivery driver.
Good for you.
Uh-huh.
Good for you.
Yeah, he's very open-minded.
Yeah. So and there's place, I guess it's a pizza chain, but I don't think we have it here, but it's in Canada. They just announced Pizza Pizza a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They have now served Daya vegan cheese on their pizzas, but so does Panago here in Vancouver, which is also a chain. So you can get your vegan pizza and enjoy it and have just like a regular takeout pizza like anyone else.
Right. Oh, by the way, speaking of pizza, please go to the somewhat new pizza restaurant in Chinatown called Virtuous Pie. There's lineups out the door every time I go there. It's incredible.
Denise and I are going there.
We're going today. We're hoping there's no lineup in the middle of the afternoon.
They make their own cheese out of cashew.
We're almost out of time here, so we wanted to talk about how to satisfy your sweet tooth.
Yams. Okay, I'm big on sweet potatoes.
You have like 20 seconds,
okay,
so
go. Throw a dozen sweet potatoes in the oven. 425, an hour to an hour and a quarter, and you basically have candy coming out.
Put on my candied pecans with cinnamon and maple syrup.
And make my nice cream. You just blend some frozen bananas with a little bit of water and you have ice cream.
Be nice to the cows. Eat nice cream.
Yeah. So.
And frozen medjool dates. That's basically caramels.
Those are all great suggestions. So we have to stop. Good stuff to be continued. Let's have you back, Denise, so you can give us more ideas, because Denise has a plethora of information. I just gave you the Aquafaba book, so maybe you can come back and report to us about that.
I'm going to go to town with that.
Yeah, so Aquafaba is the next best thing in veganism, and if you don't know what it is, you could Google it, or you can wait for us to talk about it on the show. So moving on, we've got some news.
Yes, so Nanaimo politicians are on board with a deep discovery center proposed for the Harbor City. This has animal rights activists concerned that the facility will house marine life captured from the wild. The Nanaimo Deep Discovery Association has pitched a world-class ocean center with attractions and interactive displays. We don't like that term, us animal rights activists. It's estimated at $30 to $40 million. This comes on the heels of the Vancouver Park Board's decision to ban cetacean captivity on park board land. Activists had been outspoken against the plans for Nanaimo since this announcement, as there will be fish, sea cucumbers, and may even have plans to have an octopus. There was also mention of an interactive component to the facility, which activists fear will mean touch pools or one-on-one interactions with animals, which is exploitative to the animals and also puts both parties at risk of infection. You can email your thoughts through nanaimo.ca, and we encourage you to do so, as many of us have done so. In other news, a plant-based outpatient cardiac wellness program at the Montefiore Health Center in New York now offers plant-based vegan meals for inpatients, and the film Forks Over Knives plays in patient rooms. As a plant-based cardiologist at the Montefiore Health System, cardiologist Dr. Robert Osfeld has had the privilege of seeing patients transform before his eyes. He's witnessed them evolve from illness toward health, from despair toward hope, mostly by changing what's at the end of their fork. Dr. Osfeld said that they wanted to reinforce physician discussions with inpatients about plant-based vegan meals and offer inpatients the opportunity to watch Forks Over Knives in real time in the hospital. This combination is a win-win-win. The medical team highlights the importance of the plant-based nutrition, the patient then tastes it, and the film powerfully reinforces this message. This is so different from regular hospitals where you're lucky if you can even find a vegan meal. So after a successful collaboration with Montefiore's Department of Food and Nutritional Services, they created plant-based vegan meals for inpatients that can now be ordered in five of their New York hospital locations. Simultaneously, Montefiore's Department of Patient Education worked closely with the incredible team at Forks Over Knives, which is a documentary you can find on Netflix. And now that film is available to play in the same five hospitals in front of roughly 2,300 patient beds. In other news, Anita Crines, who we've had on our show before, a Toronto woman who gave water to pigs on a truck headed to slaughter, committed an act of kindness similar to when people gave water to Jews transported on cattle trains during the Holocaust, her lawyer said in closing arguments at her trial last Thursday. Defense lawyer Gary Grill also compared Anita Crines' actions and the resulting legal battle to the experiences of historic rights activists such as Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, and Susan B. Anthony. Lawyers presented closing arguments in the Burlington, Ontario mischief trial of Crines, an activist with Toronto Pig Save. She pled not guilty to mischief after pouring bottled water through the openings of a trailer filled with dehydrated pigs outside Fearman's Pork Slaughterhouse in June 2015. During the six-day trial last fall, witnesses included experts in animal behavior and footage of slaughterhouses. Agricultural organizations say that Crines was tampering with someone else's property, as farm animals are just that in the eyes of the law, property. If found guilty, Crines could face a fine of $5,000 and jail time. The singer Moby, a well-known vegan animal rights activist, has offered to pay her fine. Justice David Harris will render a verdict on May the 4th. Many of you may be aware that the coral reef is dying. Lab-grown coral has successfully reproduced in the wild for the first time ever in a positive development for the planet's damaged ocean ecosystems. And I'm personally reading Bill Nye's book called Unstoppable, which addresses the climate crisis and gives us hope, but also a firm warning that we need to act now to turn things around. I encourage you to pick up a copy and find out what creative solutions geoengineers are coming up with.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Our feature interview is with Paul Shapiro. He is the Vice President of Policy Engagement of the Humane Society of the United States, and as such keeps up on all the latest news in the world pertaining to the animal agriculture industry, as well as societal changes in meat consumption. For our annual Meat Out show today, we have him back here for the fifth year in a row to give us all the latest info on what's happening on the planet, on issues surrounding the meat industry, and trends towards cutting out the meat and adopting plant-based diets. Hi, Paul, and welcome back to Animal Voices.
Thank you, Allison. It's an honor to be back.
Well, thank you. So I was looking back at our notes for what we talked about in the last year. And the last time you were on the show, you were speaking about the Massachusetts ballot initiative. I remember you were excited about that. And I was hoping you could give us an update on how this went and tell us about other work that HSUS has done in the past year to engage with more than 250 food companies to stop cage confinement of laying hens and pigs. And what does it mean for the welfare of the hens and the pigs?
That's so kind of you, Allison. So first and foremost, the agribusiness lobbyists were extremely upset because Massachusetts voters were set to vote on an historic ballot measure called Question 3 that, if enacted, would make the Commonwealth the first state in our country to ban not just the extreme confinement of chickens, pigs, and calves in cages, but the sale of eggs, pork, and veal from those type of cage confinement facilities, regardless of where those animals were being confined. And they poured in hundreds of thousands of dollars from Midwest factory farming interests into trying to deceive Massachusetts voters about Question 3, and they waged a very substantial in-state campaign as well, trying to deceive voters and urge them to vote against the measure. Fortunately, on Election Day this past November, Massachusetts voters saw through that fraud, and instead of rejecting the measure, they approved it by an overwhelming majority. 78% of Massachusetts voters voted yes on Question 3. Now, if you're not familiar with politics, 78% is unheard of. I mean, that's not just a political landslide. That is a political slaughter and an inhumane one at that. So props to Massachusetts for making history and sending a signal to the agribusiness lobby that the days of confining animals in cages where they can barely move an inch for the rest of their lives will be coming to an end. Now, that's on the public policy side. On the corporate policy side, that message has been being sent loud and clear now in the past year or two by major retailers who are telling their egg and their pork producers, if you want to sell us eggs or if you want to sell us pork, you cannot confine your animals in cages where they can barely move their entire lives. And so in the past 2 years, more than 200 of the biggest egg purchasers, from McDonald's and Walmart to Costco to Safeway and more, have announced that they are getting rid of cage confinement in their egg supply, and they're doing the same thing with gestation crates in their pork supply. So if you're an egg producer or a pork producer, whether you're looking at what the laws are saying you have to do from a perspective, let's say, of the Massachusetts law that will now take effect in the near future, or whether you're looking at what your own buyers are saying, which is stop locking your animals in cages or we're going to stop purchasing your product, you realize that you can no longer think that you're going to keep locking animals in cages into the distant future. It's just not going to happen.
Right. So times are changing. Now, speaking of changing times, we've been hearing a lot about clean meat this past year, which is the new term for the growing innovations in lab-grown meat. And we actually just had filmmaker Liz Marshall on the show last week to tell us about her upcoming film on the subject. And I just found out that you're writing the first book ever on clean meat, which is due out this fall. So can you tell us about the new development that you've seen and even just the past year with regards to clean meat? And what do you think about this as one of the solutions to reduce the suffering of animals in the years to come?
You're so kind to mention that, Allison, and I'll tell you a few things. So first and foremost, think about this. 150 years ago, virtually all of our homes in America were lit with one source, whale oil. Almost every home had a candle that burned whale oil, and because of this, whaling was a huge part of the economy, the fifth largest sector of the American economy. It dominated coastal politics. It was a huge lobby in Washington. It wasn't just like the oil industry. It was the oil industry back then. And there are all types of concerns that were raised about whaling, whether it was sustainable, whether we're going to drive certain whale species into extinction. And there were other means of lighting our homes, but there wasn't anything that was preferable both from a quality and cost perspective. All of a sudden, enter an entrepreneur named Abraham Gesner, who's a geologist from Canada who patented kerosene. And within just a couple decades of his patenting kerosene, which proved to be a cheaper way of lighting our lamps than whale oil, and which proved to be a superior method because you didn't have the same type of stench problems that you did with some types of whale oil. Within just a couple decades of impending kerosene, the whaling fleet of America was decimated by upwards of 80%. Within just a couple decades, completely decimated the whaling industry. And it wasn't because people were concerned about whales or because of sustainability. Whales were liberated from harpoons in America because of a superior product. So when we look at what are the alternatives that might be available to free farm animals from factory farms and from slaughter plants, and certainly the innovations in plant-based meats and eggs and milks are getting better and better. Those products are doing better and better, and they are certainly a big part of the solution. At the same time, I really do think there's a lot of people out there who are going to want to eat what they consider the, quote, real thing. And clean meat is a way to produce real animal meat without slaughtering animals. Imagine, instead of having meat coming from an animal who was raised and then slaughtered, having identical meat, real animal meat, that was just grown without the animals. That is already happening. This isn't science fiction. This isn't futuristic. This is already happening. I already myself have eaten it. And while I don't think that vegans like myself are the key target audience for it, I do think some of us will eat it, but more important is that the people who are going to KFC or the people going to Pizza Hut or the people going to McDonald's, they are the ones who will most likely be eating these products, because right now they don't eat meat because of the way it's produced. They eat meat despite the way it is produced. And imagine if there were a better alternative that was cheaper, that was functionally the same thing, and that didn't involve all of the problems of animal slaughter, the ecological destruction, and so on. That's the promise that the clean meat movement holds. This week alone, a great company called Memphis Meats, which was founded just a year ago, announced that it had produced the first ever clean chicken and clean duck and held a tasting of it in the Bay Area. And so I would ask you to imagine, Allison, what it would look like to be in a world where, let's say, a factory farm perhaps seemed as antiquated as a whaling ship, or if a slaughter plant seemed as archaic as a horse-drawn carriage. That's what I think clean meat can do. That's why I'm writing about it, and that's why I'm so enthusiastic about the potential for this industry to completely upend the way that we have been producing meat for so long, spare vast numbers of animals the misery that they're enduring today, and solve a lot of humanity's most pressing problems, from climate change to other important environmental catastrophes that are unfolding before us that are largely or in part linked to animal agriculture. And we can produce a lot more food for the coming billions of humans who are going to be on the planet by 2050. So it's a win-win proposition. I'm enthusiastic about it, and I look forward to talking with you more when the book comes out this fall.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we have a lot of plant protein meat alternatives on the market, like lots and lots. That's an industry that's growing as well. There's so many companies now that are creating ground beef and chicken cutlets and sausages, etc., out of plants. And Tyson Foods, one of the world's largest meat processors, has even bought a 5% share in one of these companies called Beyond Meat, which I know HSUS is also invested in. So what do you think it means for the plant-based protein industry when even one of the world's largest animal slaughterers is now acknowledging that the demand for plant-based proteins is rising faster than the demand for animal products, and they are investing in this demand?
Well, I'll tell you what it means. It means that the times, they are changing. The times are changing when you see companies like Tyson, America's biggest meat company, investing in Beyond Meat, which, as you said, Allison, a company HSUS has also been a backer in for years financially. And the CEO of Tyson, Tom Hayes, said that this might be the future of meat. Yeah. You know, they're looking at diversifying their portfolio because the demand for protein in our country has not waned, but the desire to diversify the type of protein that people are eating has increased. And so Americans want to be eating either as much or even more protein as they do now, but they want it to come from different sources, not just from the same typical beef, chicken, and pork, but rather some of it coming from the plant kingdom. So if you look, for example, at the Natural Foods Expo that occurred in Southern California this past week, it may as well have been the plant-based expo. Just almost every innovation that's going on, plant-based is the hot new item in this world. It's going to be a big trend. Companies like Beyond Meat are doing extremely well, and they have competitors now, which is a good thing. For example, Impossible Foods, which is also producing a very good burger that actually bleeds just like a regular animal-based burger would. And they are now just slowly starting to get onto the market. So Beyond Meat is pretty far ahead of them. They're in thousands of grocery stores around the country. But the innovation that these companies are bringing, I think, can do a lot to help animals, as has already been shown by companies like Hampton Creek, this company that didn't exist 7 years ago, that now is this huge company producing lots of egg-free and dairy-free products, and they are competing with and beating many of the traditional animal-based products in conventional grocery stores, not just in Whole Foods or in local natural food stores, but in Target and in Walmart and in other major big-box grocery chains. Hampton Creek's products are being sold right next to their mainstream competitors because they are mainstream. And that's exactly what needs to happen. We can't let the plant-based protein sector remain relegated to either the frozen section or, even worse, just to natural food stores. I'm happy to go to natural food stores myself, but that's not where most people get their food, and most people are not accustomed to buying protein in the frozen section of their supermarket no matter what. So these are important innovations, important advancements, and I think are combining to show the way to a future in which we are less dependent on animals for our protein.
Well, thank you for that. I want to move on to talk about U.S. politics, because you are right there entrenched in it all in Washington, D.C., in that area. What are your views about how farmed animal welfare issues will be addressed and are starting to be addressed already by the new Trump administration? For those of us not up to date with U.S. politics, can you tell us a little about the changes that have been made in the administration under Donald Trump, such as the recent blackout of animal welfare violation data from the web? And how do you think the animals are going to be affected?
Allison, so we've been talking about a lot of things that are very good news, and now I guess we can shift to something where an issue where it definitely means not so good news and we need to fight hard. So in short, the new administration and the new Congress have not been a friend to animals. One of the very first things that they did was to remove, as you mentioned, a lot of animal welfare violation data from the web. This is the violation records for companies that have violated the Federal Animal Welfare Act. So zoos, circuses, puppy mills, horse shows, animal experimentation facilities, and more are, if they violate the Animal Welfare Act, they can have that put online. And now they've been completely anonymized by removing this information so the public can't go and see it. And it's not just a matter of transparency, which is big enough in and of itself, but there are lots of laws across the country, including in many states and in dozens of cities, that, for example, require pet stores only to sell from puppy suppliers that don't have Animal Welfare Act violations. So the effect of taking this down from the web is both to decrease transparency, and it doesn't necessarily nullify these state and local laws, but it certainly mutes them and renders them completely unenforceable. So it's a really big problem on that front. And another really big problem, especially for farm animals, is that toward the end of the Obama administration, they implemented an upgrade in the animal welfare standards for animals raised under the National Organic Program. So there are millions of animals who are raised organically in the U.S., and up until now, being organic did not really mean much for animal welfare. There are some important benefits over conventionally produced animals, but for the most part, it really wasn't that different. The Obama administration dramatically upgraded standards of care for farm animals under the organic program. And one of the very first things the Trump administration did was order a 60-day review of that rule to see whether or not they wanted to implement it or not. So there are just two examples of an assault that is going on animal welfare from the new administration since it took office. And there are numerous other assaults that have come about, too, not that necessarily relate to the treatment of animals in the farm and food sector, but for wildlife, for horses, and more. And so we're fighting very hard because we know that Americans, when they voted, did not believe that they were voting for animal cruelty. They did not think they were open. They were voting to deregulate a system of agribusiness or of other types of animal exploitation that once had at least some rules and then thinking that it would have none. And so it's a battle and one that we're going to have to continue fighting for some time to come, I predict.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to share for Meat Out Day, such as any other new initiatives by HSUS?
Well, one of the most important and most exciting things that is going on is that schools across the United States are implementing Meatless Monday or other types of meat reduction programs. And so, for example, we have now worked with a whole host of school districts like Detroit, Los Angeles, and more to go entirely vegetarian on Mondays. And the Detroit school district, K through 12, was so into it. They liked it so much that now they're meatless 2 days a week. Think about how many animals that spares, how many children that helps to have 2 full days out of the 5 days that they're in school being completely meat-free. It's a really important institutional way to slash demand for meat, to improve public health, and to improve ecological sustainability. And excitingly, my colleague, Christy Middleton, who's our Senior Director of Food Policy at the Humane Society of the United States, just last week published a book on this topic called Meat Less, Meat Less, which is all about how eating less meat can do a world of good for you, for the planet, and for animals. So if you haven't yet checked it out, I highly encourage you to check out Christy Middleton's Meat Less.
Well, I just received your book in the mail last week, so I will be checking it out, and maybe we can have her on the show.
Great.
As well. Yeah, perfect. So earlier in the show, we were talking about how each of us eat vegan daily. We were giving suggestions of things to eat. You're vegan yourself. We've got 2 minutes here. Can you give us a quick synopsis of the types of food that you like to eat and make on a daily basis, starting with breakfast? What do you have for breakfast?
Allison, so
don't say black
I am
coffee.
A vegan. I've been a vegan now since 1993, and I love it. It was among the greatest decisions I ever made in my life. But in the mornings, I usually, after going to the gym, I like to make a smoothie.
Oh, just
and
like me.
You're talking about frozen fruit. A lot of the times I'll blend up something like frozen cauliflower in there. You can't taste it at all.
I mean, in a smoothie.
Especially if you buy frozen riced cauliflower, you just can't taste it. It's like you just never put it in.
And you're getting your cruciferous vegetables. Perfect.
Yes, in fact, I try to get them more than once a day, but I certainly will put it into the smoothie. I also eat a lot of pumpkin seeds, and so I put a lot of them in the smoothie, too. They're very high in iron, high in zinc, high in protein. They're excellent. I really recommend them. For lunch, I'll usually have something like lentils with either brown rice or quinoa. I know I'm a very stereotypical vegan by doing something like that. And I eat a lot of fruit throughout the day, mm-hmm. So I try to buy the least expensive fruit I can.
Me too.
A lot of apples
the
and
19
oranges,
cents a pound bananas.
I do. I'm sorry?
I buy 19 cents a pound bananas. That's what I was talking about.
Ooh, 19 cents,
yeah, whatever.
Allison, you are putting
yeah,
me to that, shame.
That's less than U.S.
Great,
money.
If you go to plantbasedonabudget.com, mm-hmm. There's great meal plans there that you can get, like, the cheapest way to eat vegan. Again, plantbasedonabudget.com. It's really cool. So check that out. And then for dinner, I might have something like pasta with vegetables, tomato sauce, and I'll often put beans in there, like if you put maybe red beans or pinto beans into your pasta sauce. It's really good. It sounds unconventional, but it actually is quite excellent, and it's a good way to boost the fiber and protein in your meal. So there you have it, 3 meals plus a lot of fruit, and I'll eat a lot of nuts, like either peanuts or sometimes cashews if I'm feeling like I want to spend that much.
That's
it's a lot of peanuts.
That's
especially.
Great. Sounds like a very well-balanced diet. So good for you. I love hearing about what other vegans eat. It inspires me. Thank you, Paul, for coming on our annual meetout show today to share with us some of your insights on the current news in animal agriculture and the trends towards eating less meat. To find out more about the work that Paul does for animal protection, please visit the website humanesociety.org. Thanks, Paul, and happy meetout day to you.
Thank you, Allison. You too. Thanks for having me on.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show, Friday, March the 24th. We'll be presenting a show on how sound affects animals. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. To end the show today, we are playing a song for Meet Out Day called Nothing with a Face by Freddie Clark. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts which we're about to receive from thy bounty through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Says I eat nothing with a face. I never kill anything before I say grace. I eat nothing's child, nothing's brother, nothing's boyfriend or significant other, nothing's newborn, nothing's kid, nothing's mother who got what her mother did. Nothing, nothing with a face, nothing. I hate to waste nothing, nothing with a face. I don't kill anything before I say grace. I'm Swan Dang from Vietnam. Got a vegan house called Lack of Lamb. I eat nothing's kidney, nothing's liver, nothing's finger, slowly simmer. Nothing's body baked in honey, nothing's ass. On your plate, you're about to eat the safe way slaughter from womb to tomb to this plain white wrapper in your dining room.
Foul mouth!
I eat nothing's legs.
Foul mouth!
I eat nothing's thighs.
Foul mouth!
I eat nothing's wings.
Foul mouth! I eat nothing's eyes.
This lamb is your lamb, this lamb is my lamb, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulfstream waters, this lamb was made for you and me.